Support for User Defenders is provided by Adobe XD. Adobe XD reimagines how designers create user experiences for websites, mobile, and more. Try it free at userdefenders.com/XD.
You're always challenging things. So I've always challenged the stuff that was brought to me. I remember in type class telling my type teacher, okay, so we're learning about all these old dead white men. You can't sit here and tell me that there are no black type designers. Like, she had to work. She was like, Tim, it took me 4 weeks to find one, but here go one that I found in Africa. It was like, okay, thank you. I appreciate the work. You did really well.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview UX superheroes who fight for the users in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to episode 52. And welcome to the brand new season 5. We're back. So great to be back with you again after the long season break. I hope you're doing well, Defenders, and continuing your important fight for the users. I've had an interesting series of mostly fortunate events during the break. Those of you on the Biweekly Bugle will remember me telling a really long story about my slip on the ice back in February. Well, after a false diagnosis and walking and running on it for nearly 2 months, I got the right diagnosis after noticing the swelling wasn't decreasing, and I learned I needed ankle surgery. I went ahead with it because arthritis, which rendered me disabled for 6 weeks, and boy, have my empathy levels increased for accessibility and how our environments so heavily influence us. Anyway, I'm super excited. Enough about me. Let's talk about this super guest that kicks off the season. I am super excited to kick it off with the fun and hilarious founder of the important 28 Days of Black Designers project, Tim Hikes. We talk about the importance of highlighting black designers through his project and of not waiting for permission, especially to do something that could impact the world. This is a truly inspiring one, Defenders, and I'm thrilled again to be back with you for what could be the best season yet. So I want to share an iTunes review that came through, the first one of season 5. This one is from Gladia, my dear friend Gladia, in the Bay Area. She says, simply amazing, 5 stars. I started listening to User Defenders podcast when I decided to quit my job to become a UX designer. I was nervous and intimidated on how I was going to make the switch, but listening to this podcast gave me the knowledge and confidence I needed. Now, working as a UX designer, I'm still inspired by the guests that come on. I learn something new every time, and who doesn't love superheroes? Fight on, my friend. Gladia, dear friend, thank you so much for that wonderful, wonderful review. It means a ton to me, and I'm so glad that what I'm doing here and what my super guests have been doing by coming on and sharing their knowledge and wisdom has inspired you to take action, and you have made that switch. You have made that career switch, and you are doing so great. I keep tabs on you occasionally. I don't know if you know that, but super proud of you, dear friend. Thanks again for leaving that review. And Defenders listening, as always, I would be so honored if you would take a few moments like Gladia did to leave a rating and review on iTunes. It helps the show a lot to keep it in a high ranking and help other designers who are possibly struggling with their fight for the users and to stay inspired in this ever-evolving, challenging field. You can do that at going to either searching for User Defenders or even UX on iTunes, or you can go to userdefenders.com/review. Thanks in advance. Timothy Hikes, a.k.a. Tim Hikes, is a user experience designer and illustrator working in St. Louis, Missouri. He's had the pleasure of seeing his work featured on Fast Company, Adobe, nationally with AIGA, Envision App, and socially with Behance, and many other sites and publications. He is nationally known for his side projects, which includes the 28 Days of Black Designers Project, the Design Plus Diversity Conference and podcast, the hashtag We Stand Together project, and on YouTube on the Tim Hikes channel. A fun fact about Tim is that he's really shy in a one-on-one situation. I am feeling that's not going to count for today. Welcome to User Defenders, Tim. I am super excited to have you on the show today.
Hi, thanks. I'm great, and I'm very excited to be on the show today.
Where are you working now? Or can you say?
Yeah, I can say. I'm currently at Calera's, and so they have a portfolio of shoes. So they are on, I work on the Allen Edmonds shoe line there. So I'm the senior e-commerce designer on that team. They also own, you might know, Famous Footwear. So it's 1,000-something stores throughout the U.S. They own that. The Naturalizer, which is a woman's shoe, they own that. So it's about 30-something organizations of shoes that they hover over. But I was hired for Allen Edmonds. And Allen Edmonds is a American brand shoe made right here in America in Wisconsin. And they're currently rebranding that line to fit a broader audience. And they brought me on with my expertise to help basically after the brand, it's a new website we're putting out and working with the kinks there to make everything work right for the users because they have a worldwide audience that actually buys from that site. So they see more traffic on the web versus in their stores. And so, yeah, it's very exciting.
Okay, cool. Well, that sounds cool, Tim. How long have you been over there?
Oh, it might be about 3 weeks now.
Okay, very new, very fresh. You like the environment? You like the folks there?
Yeah, everybody's really nice. And sometimes I can be a little silly. So I like to sing and dance and do all crazy stuff. And if I'm showing examples about something, I'm normally up and got my body twisted in some type of way, showing the example. No, this is what I call a downward dog. Yeah, something crazy.
I love it. Well, I think I picked the right person like you to have on the show because I love the entertaining aspect and the fun, making it fun. So you are definitely a right candidate and right superhero for this. So speaking of superheroes, as you know, this is a fun superhero theme and every superhero has a secret identity and origin story. Let's talk about yours. I'd like to start the show by you taking a few moments just to give us a look into your personal life.
Oh yeah. So, I'll go all the way back. So I'm one of six.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm in the middle. So it's five brothers, one of six. I'm in the middle. So it's two of us in the middle. Big family, my mom, dad, and all of us.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And here in St. Louis, we grew up poor. So my dad is, his side of the family is from Tupelo, Mississippi. And my mother, her side of the family is from Michigan, north and south came together in St. Louis. And I grew up started in Pine Line, Missouri. I went to Pine Line Elementary. And from there, my mom and dad got better jobs, but then they ended up divorcing. And so we ended up being separated for a little bit. And I went to the county in St. Louis, which had better school districts there. But that was a huge transition for me because, I went to a predominantly black school, transitioning into a school that was predominantly white. So it was a lot of things that I had to learn and deal with growing up. So grew up through the Hayeswood school district. Oh, yeah, it was. But eventually I was able to navigate that. I would kind of say successfully because by the end of my senior year, I was popular and I ended up being popular in high school because I was a part of everything. So I was in every club. And so I knew everybody from band, choir to the prep club where we prepped for every single dance at the school, science club. If you name the club, I was in it and I did. I was even on the football team, which a lot of people didn't know until I put up pictures recently of me sitting there freshman year on the football team. So, yeah, I did a lot of that. Afterwards, my grandmother was really pushing for me to be a lawyer. And she kind of decided who was doing what in the family. And so I left, I graduated in 2002, went off to Lincoln University of Missouri. Lincoln University of Missouri, I was actually studying to be a criminal justice major. And I worked my way up through the ranks at Lincoln University of Missouri because I ended up being Student Government Association president there. I joined a fraternity, Kappa Kappa Psi National Honorary Band Fraternity. Huge in band. A lot of the arrangements that they play now are some of the arrangements that I helped to arrange that the band still plays that are some of their traditional pieces now.
That's cool.
And From there, while I was in school at Link University, I was always designing flyers for the different clubs, organizations. And when I became Student Government Association president, of course, I was designing my own flyers for the events the Student Government Association were doing, you know, managing a budget about $500,000 for the students per semester that year, which is pretty cool.
Wow.
And then from there, I ended up leaving. I worked for Express Scripts for a little bit, and I was like, you know what? I am a graphic designer. And so I looked up some schools, and I started at St. Louis Community College at Florissant Valley, where I got my associates in graphic communications there. What's really nice there, like a lot of the teachers that are there are from like Yale or Harvard. So they are from these really big institutions, and they think really completely like out of the box when it comes to teaching art. And so I ended up graduating from there, and I finished my degree and got my bachelor's from the University of Missouri, St. Louis, UMSL is what we call it, with it's a fine arts with emphasis in, studio art. And so, yeah, that brings me almost up to date.
Yeah, well, very good. Wow, you got quite an extensive backstory, Tim. And one thing that I've noticed is that a lot of UX designers especially have their hands at a lot of different things. It's really kind of cool. And I think it just makes us better designers, the fact that mm-hmm. we have a lot of varying interests and have kind of touched a lot of things. And because this field is so diverse and there's so many different areas and, you know, like areas of business to learn and every business is run differently and do different things. So I just love that. And I'm going to ask you this because I think I heard you were on an Adobe XD. You did a tutorial or something like you built a prototype live. Mm-hmm. And I heard you say something. Speaking of your backstory, did I hear you say you started out as a police officer?
A criminal justice degree from Link University. Yeah.
I love heard it. That. Tell me, can you touch on that briefly? Because it's just really fascinating to me.
That's what everybody wants to hear. And that's like a thing that I just never want to talk about. But yeah, at Link University, I studied criminal justice. And it just wasn't for me at all.
Okay.
I mean, when people meet me, I mean, think about me being called to a gunfight. Like, really? Like, I'm the worst person. No, like you just called and told me they were shooting. So do you think I'm going to call? Oh, wait a minute. Think about me working at a jail. You said they were throwing urine. No, I'm not going. I don't want nothing on me. What do I look like? No. They fighting in the calf, but we'll just wait for them to fight it out, and then I'll walk in. No, that wasn't me at all. Nope, I just don't do it. Don't do violence like that. I don't even know what I was thinking. Well, I do know what I was thinking. I thought I was going to transition quickly from after getting the degree in criminal justice to being a lawyer, but then, yeah, that didn't work. I found that I was an artist, and so, yeah.
You see, I could just see you like, you know, holding somebody up and then like trying to like be real serious. Like you got those cops have to get pretty loud sometimes and pretty expletive, you know, even if they don't like to use swear words, they have to do it because it makes them sound more authoritative, you mm-hmm. know, but I could just see you standing there and just like trying not to laugh of like, dude, you got a booger and you're hanging out of your nose, you know, like talking to the criminal, like, dude, you gotta get some snot hanging out, dude.
I would probably get in trouble for like smaller things. Like, oh, wait a minute, you look a mess. What were you thinking coming out the house like that? Now you're embarrassing us all. Jesus, why don't you go back and try it again? Oh my God.
Oh my God, this is great. So why the web, Tim? And I know that, I mean, you started, again, you have humble beginnings just like we all do, but it all kind of brought you to where you are now and working on the web and in user experience. And, you know, why the web? Why UX?
So UX is a funny thing. A lot of people like to think that, a lot of people try to tie it into things within the past, but actually, you know, as we all know, the phrase is still kind of new within the industry. And yeah. Also, you know, currently, as I like to say, that we still, as UX designers, have yet to sit down ourselves to define, you know, this is exactly what a UX designer is from this point forward. And, you know, these are the basics we expect, you know, every UX designer to have from this point moving forward. This is the difference between a full stack UX designer versus a regular UX designer. This is why some organizations might break off a UX designer from a UX researcher. And this is the difference in what they do and setting those foundations. You know, going from, well, my first excitement was web design, like designing websites. But I got into a place where I was very interested in how people were using different websites. And one person who really helped, like, kick me in the head with that was Patrick McNeil, because at the time when I was at UMSL, I was taking his UX classes, and he was currently finishing up his master's in UX class, in UX. So he was really teaching up a lot of stuff that he was getting for the first time and trying to help us really understand how users behave and how they navigate through things and how to make their navigations easier and pleasant and successful, you know, which could lead to higher conversion rates, which could lead to more people using your application or something like that. And so I'm just really interested in, you know, how people behave on the web, why they behave on the web. Some things that I'm currently like researching and trying to figure out, you know, is there a such thing as unintentionally designing something that's for one population of people? So, you know, are there color combinations and, you know, the way that you lay words out on a page or, you know, our navigation structure, period, that works well for one group of people? You know, one of my friends, D. Nichols, posed the question, you know, is there a such thing as a racial interface? You know, could an interface itself be racist? You know, I'm interested to find out, is there such a thing? Right now, from the current work I've been doing, I can say, like, no, you know, there's nothing right now that could lead us to figure out that what we do or how we navigate or, you know, a certain group of people using something that, you know, it's just for them. Nobody else will be able to use it or navigate through it. But yeah, I'm interested in like doing more and trying to figure out that. So these small things keep me in the UX realm and they keep me always wanting to create the next project to figure out, you know, how we do things as designers, UX designers, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting, Tim. And what you said about racist interface, like, that's a crazy notion right there. And one thought that occurred to me is in the age of voice UX, it depends on who's programming it, right? I mean, that's another kind of hard, that calls us back to ethics and just being civilized people and being good to each other, right? And because unfortunately and sadly, there's still a remnant, there's still an element of racism, you know, and sadly, especially in America, it's just a terrible thing. But I think it depends on who's on the other side of those keys. Yes. Programming this thing, right? I think there's a real good ethical lesson in all of this for all of us to just, you know, for especially those, sadly, for those who are bent that way that, you know, hey, you know what? We're all the same. We all bleed the same color. You know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And I just, it's a real problem, man. Can you want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. I'm sure people can remember, this might've been about 2 years ago where there was a video of a black guy in a bathroom and he kept trying to put his hand under the soap dispenser, but it wasn't coming out for him. But then right counterparts were putting their hands up under it and it was spitting out. I mean, to me, I think that was unintentional, but that could speak to it, such as, you know, you were designing and you have it scan your hand and it works well. It goes out on the market. It's in all these bathrooms. And you had no idea that it was set to only work for a certain skin color. I mean, if you, the black community talks about cameras all the time because you have to really go in and mess with a few things for us to actually look like our skin color when it comes up on a photo. Normally, I'm like 10 times darker than what I am. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I don't want to be more purple than I already am. But most of the time, like, you have to go in and fix those because cameras are preset for a certain skin tone. So yeah, there's lots of things I think that are done unintentionally that most people wouldn't think about. You know, most people think about the camera taking the picture. But that also leads me to the idea where I think it was Henry Ford who said, if I would have asked someone like what they wanted, they would have told me a faster horse, you know? Right. So a lot of things with users, we ask and forget that sometimes they do not know what they want, you know, and it's up to like a UX designer to figure out that in between, that this is something that I believe that the user needs and wants but don't know they want. It's almost like thick and chunky spaghetti sauce, because that was something else that users didn't know they wanted.
No, that's a really good point, Tim. And I think, like you said, with the faucet, that just, I could not believe that. And I really do agree with you. I think that was just a sincere mistake. I don't think that there was an actual, you know, racist intention in that. But I think that the whole point is, there's a couple of points here. One, test with different kinds of people. Right? Like, don't just test with a panel of white people. If you're building a hardware that requires light sensitivity, don't just test with white people. Test with all sorts of colors of people, because those are the people that'll be using this thing, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other lesson is, okay, we failed. Let's learn and let's fix this. So I think those are just a couple of the things that we can kind of do. And I'm glad to see, you know, I'm glad to see this whole industry shift so much. I mean, it really hasn't. And I think this is a good segue into the 28 Days of Black Designers project, Tim, that you have, founded and felt led to put this thing together, which has been an incredible impact on the design industry. Can you talk about that, Tim? Like, what inspired you to come up with this project?
And
what is it?
The 28 Days of Black Designers Project. Really, before that project happened, a friend of mine, Antoinette Curl, and I were having a conversation. Well, if I say a name, that's because they're Googleable and they're like probably a national speaker, and that's why I say their names. But we were talking, and I told her that I wanted to do the project because there's nothing that really spotlight black designers. And one thing that I kept hearing a lot, especially Timothy Goodman kept pointing out, like, people were saying, oh, there's no black designers out there, or, you know, I can't find them. And I'm like, oh, yeah, there's plenty. Like, I know at least four here in St. Louis. Wish there were more, but there's plenty out there. And not only are we out there, we're doing good work, you know, in extraordinary places like Google and Apple and Amazon. And so with that, it happened kind of quickly. I can probably say within 4 days, I built a site that first year, pushed out a tweet that ended up getting like 200 plus responses and led to a group of people contacting me to be like a part of the project. And interviewing these people, I became more of a curator of selecting the right group of people and the right type of formation to fit what days after who and next. And so the beginning of the project, I tried to do like 7-7-7. So I guess it was like seven general designers. So whether it was like UX, graphic design, or whatever, seven designers from the history. So we're talking about designers who were past or non-living. And then seven designers from the architecture field and seven designers from the fashion field to try to have a mix of designers who are doing multiple different things. But of course, early on, I saw like the issues with that, because I mean, for me to still find stories now of designers, black designers, who are saying they're the first black designer in their city here in like 2018, which just blows my mind. And it was very difficult to find designers from history or what we considered design back during that time. So something earlier than 1900, trying to find a black designer, none was written. Nobody was creating that history. You know, you see things where Frederick Douglass was doing a few things, but within history, we don't consider Frederick Douglass a designer. And so with that, I started curating these people and pushed out the story and the narrative, and got lots of responses back. A lot of black designers were contacting me saying that they thought they were the only one. And we're talking about 3 years ago when I first started doing this, you know, and designers, black designers saying like, I thought I was the only black designer. When I was going through school, I was the only black designer there. As I started to work and find work, I was the only black designer at my job. And it wasn't until I've seen this project that there are other black designers. So I kind of feel fortunate in that aspect, because I at least had two other black designers within my class. Well, three. One graduated later than I did, but three other black designers within my class, you know, and like we were always there for each other. But to hear stories where people didn't have another black designer and it wasn't a black designer to graduate from that program within the past 10 years that they graduate from, you know, it was kind of sad to hear. And then as you think about smaller cities, you know, these stories are like almost kind of frightening what the designers are talking about. And so I'm just happy that it reaches a large population of people. I'm happy to hear stories from teachers who are saying that they're actually, you know, using it as curriculum in their classroom to point black designers to the project to show them, like, here are what other black designers are doing. This is a black designer at Amazon. You know, here's a black designer at IDEO. And then also it puts the spotlight on people that you wouldn't necessarily think were black because their skin tones are so fair. So a good example is Ashley Axios. She worked up under the Obama administration and she was the art director for the White House. You know, most people, if you saw her out in public, most people wouldn't have thought that she was like black, but Ashley is like the blackest of them all. I know she listened to it. She's like, Tim, you called me the blackest of them all, but she's a really good friend. But yeah, Ashley is 100%, you know, a black designer working at Automattic, and she's doing really great work. And she was there at the White House with Obama, you know?
Wow. That is so cool. I love that you've done this, Tim. And this is such a service to not only the design industry, but to humanity. I mean, I think that, you know, it's just awesome for you to take this mantle up on your own. Nobody asked you to do this. You know, you just felt inspired and led to do this and you did it. And it's just shining a well-deserved spotlight on many who unfortunately are there's just not enough awareness. And, you know, in this, and so I was curious, you know, about, I have actually a number of questions about this, but I want to know, like, why aren't there more black designers, you know, or are there, and we just don't know it yet. And that's kind of part of your work is shining the light. Can you speak to that?
Yes, there are a lot of different factors to why there are not a lot of black designers. And so I'm going to first start with the one that's more obvious to me is most of the black community is still kind of poor, I would say. There's a number of us that have broken out, but within that, parents want the best for their kids, you know, so parents are looking at things that they are, careers that they know are successful for their kids. And from younger ages, they're like speaking those into existence. You know, they're telling them, you know, doctor, lawyer, you know, and go to school to be, you know, these two, because in those two fields, they're very successful, you know. And what happens is people get into those fields and, you know, never knew about graphic design and come to find out that they were drawn their whole lives and they could have been a designer. I am so used to seeing, especially around my friends where I see their kids or they're drawing at very young ages and, you know, they're really good and talented, you know, and I'm talking to them and letting them know, like, if you love this now, you know, if you keep this up when you get my age and make a career out of this, you know, you'll be a world-renowned designer, you know, because your skills are good at this level. So imagine what you can do if you did this every day when you get to my age. And so just speaking that confidence and then also letting parents know that, you know, it's a very lucrative career, you know, what UX designers are making. Even here in St. Louis, especially if you get into the in-house community, what a UX designer is making at Wells Fargo or Express Scripts or even Claire's, I mean, the median is about $85,000 a year. So in St. Louis, where the housing market is not expanded as much as other places, you know, they can have, your children can have a very successful career. But then there are also the other factors outside of the black community that leads to there not being that many black designers. Part of that is the visibility. Going in and have to work through the issues of an art program where, you know, things are, you're always challenging things. So I've always challenged the stuff that was brought to me. I remember in type class telling my type teacher, okay, so we're learning about all these old dead white men. You can't sit here and tell me that there are no black type designers. Like, she had to work. She was like, Tim, it took me 4 weeks to find one, but here go one that I found in Africa. It was like, okay, thank you. I appreciate the work. You did really well, you know, but you have that going on. And then, it's, you know, always questioning yourself, you know, are you as good as your white counterparts? Because I mean, people gravitate to things that they're used to. I mean, I grew up, you know, with a black family. So, of course, another, you know, black family or individual, I'm going to be used to speaking with them. You know, I know from their body language, you know, exactly, you know, how they're feeling, they're thinking, because that's what I grew up around. And so it's just easy to connect with that. And so when you don't have lots of that, when you're going through that intense curriculum, it becomes issue. And then early, as I said, there's still a big part of the black community that's, you know, more poor than others. And so we all know an art degree costs more money than most of these other degrees. I mean, the materials and stuff that you're going to need to produce what you need to produce and be successful as an art student, it costs money. And a lot of black students are unable to continue at that rate to stay successful. And I mean, it's really hard on teachers to try to help those students in need to help facilitate that. And then third, and then last, there's so many of them, but I'm going to stop with this last one. A lot of the opportunities that are available for students out there have user experience issues, such as you can't Google black design scholarship and pop up with like 50, 60, you know, different things that a black student could sign up for. Well, let me say it's student of color, period. So, you know, those opportunities are really hard to find. And when you go through and look at the selection from people who've won in previous years for some of those opportunities that's out there, and you don't see any representation of yourself, you figure that it's not for you. So there's a lot that could be done all around just to show that, like, we're there. And then there's a lot that could be done within the black community to say, yo, like, we are out here in this field making a difference and making a good living off this, to help parents believe that there's an opportunity for their children and their future careers as a designer.
Very awesome stuff, Tim. I appreciate all of the knowledge bombs you just dropped and just helping enlighten the design community in general as to, you know, some of the challenges that exist. And thankfully, you know, some are being overcome, but I think it's, you know, people like you just shining the light in the spotlight and working for change, you know, to kind of help things in this area. So I just applaud you, brother. I'm just so thankful for you and for doing this.
Oh, thank you. You know, it's really hard work, because I keep telling people that the difference is tact. You know, you can tell somebody to go to hell in such a way that they look forward to the trip. And I'm, well, not literally trying to tell people to go to hell, but, you know, explain these situations in a way that it doesn't offend people, you know, bringing truth to the light, where I'm not saying, oh, it's because of this community or that community, but showing, you know, the light on both sides. What can we do as a community together to help, number one, fix the things that are inside, but also outside to help make it better? So, I mean, just being cognizant of those different things really helps to lead that charge, to bring people aware of it. Because once you start pointing fingers, it's over, because you have a whole bunch of mad people. No one's going to do anything.
Ain't that the truth? Well, I, you know, last thing I'll say on this, because I'm so glad we spent an earlier part of this episode to touch on this, in case somebody tunes out after, I you know, at least they got, I think the most important thing, you know, right alongside your career path and everything and your wisdom, is just shining a spotlight on this. So the last thing I want to say is about this, is in this segment, is I read in about this project, and in one of your interviews, you were interviewed, I can't remember, I think it was from Adobe or Envision, I can't recall, but one of the things that was asked about or that you mentioned, I think, was that one of your expectations and your kind of your goals and out of the outcome of this project is that you want it to populate on a search in Google, like on the first, you know, like populate real early on a search for black designer or black designers. And I want to tell you, before the interview, I Googled both terms, and your incredibly inspiring project is not the first result, but it's on the first page. So that's a huge win, I think. And I believe, you know, the longer you persist and longer, you know, the more folks that kind of talk about this, it will only help to continue to climb the ranks. So, you know, well done, sir.
Thanks. Yeah, that was definitely your spot on with that, one of my goals, because before, if you Google like a black designer, you always got the fashion designer, you know, or like 25 great black fashion designers from this, that, and other, but you never saw any graphic designers. So just, that was like one of the biggest things that I wanted to focus on. So we'll see what happens in the next couple of years if that can come up.
I am going to say right now it's going to.
Design and build interactive prototypes, update artwork, and test your experiences, all without having to upload, sync, or jump back and forth between apps. Adobe XD is available for both Mac and PC and integrates with Adobe Creative Cloud libraries, meaning that no matter what your team configuration, XD has you covered. And now you can get Adobe XD for free. Just go to userdefenders.com/XD to learn more.
I'm a big believer in personal growth. I think, and I actually have strong convictions that I think the better human that we are, the better designer that we are. I just think that there's a real correlation there. I just really believe that, and I've seen it. And I love the quote. I'm a quotes guy. I love the quote that says, we're either growing or dying, like plants.
Yes.
Right? We look at the plant life. We look at the plant world and the trees, and like a tree is either growing or it's dying. A plant, the same thing. So why do we think it's different with us? Like, why do we think we can just, you know, and I love Netflix, and I've known to binge watch. I'm binge watching Breaking Bad right now for the second time. You know, why do we think that we can just sit on the couch and watch Netflix and still think we can change the world? I think that there's got to be a, you know, the balance has to tip the other way, I think, for sure. And there's nothing wrong with it. And again, I love a good Netflix show, but I think that there comes a time where we have to just kind of, you know, kind of listen for our calling and get up and do something about it, like you did with the 28 Days of Black Designers project. And speaking of, you know, I love the advice that your teacher gave you about just, you know, you have to strive for this. Like, you have to be hungry enough. Do you have to be hungry enough to be the brightest you can possibly be and learn whatever it is your interest is, learn that thing inside and out. I love that advice. And I found there's somebody that you highlighted on the 28 Blacks project. Her name is Tiffany Middleton. She's an ESP. She designs at ESPN. Mm-hmm. And I saw a quote that she put out there. I think it just puts a bow on it really nicely. She said, hard work beats talent when talent fails to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Yes. Yeah,
so
Tiffany
good.
Is an awesome person. And the work that she does at ESPN is really great, because she actually works directly on the Snapchat app at ESPN. And so I had the opportunity to meet her when I went up to ESPN, actually that first year, because the project, they were so interested in that I interviewed her. They brought me up there and I got to, you know, go around on campus and see all the superstar football players that were there, because I'm really into football and basketball. And yeah, it was great.
Nice. Go Warriors. Again. Do you think LeBron's going to come back to the Cavaliers?
He might as well just go ahead and join Golden State. I mean,
as if they need another star player, though.
I mean, if once that happens, you know, they can like just shut down the next 10 years and I'll be happy. You know, I love me some Golden State.
Well, I'll tell you, those guys have the hard work and the talent. So they got the double threat there. I loved watching, you know, the series was incredible. LeBron is just legendary.
Yes.
But he's just not surrounded. He's kind of the pinnacle. He hasn't been surrounded with as great of players as, you know, babyface assassin.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's awesome, man. Hey, Tim, what's your design superpower?
So my design superpower would be able. So, you know, like how when you're doing your, when you're testing and the information is like sometimes can be all over the place. You thought you were going to get, you have some things that are confirmed and some other things that you wish was confirmed. But after like sitting here through these interviews with people, either remote or in person, you find out it's all over the place. I'm really able to narrow down that research and figure out, okay, well, it was all over the place because, yes, we had people representing, you know, this cross section, but we didn't narrow down on age. So once we started getting people who are like around this same target age, you started hearing some of the same things and noticing it was different for a population of people who might be older, you know, versus people who are younger. So I'm really good within that, trying to figure out those little nuances, because they bother me. They really bother me when that happens. Like, you can do like 7-8 different tests on like different prototypes, and you know, you get to a point where certain things are just all over the place. It's just like, oh my God, we didn't get none of the people that we interviewed or we had test this prototype to say the same thing about this certain area. But it normally boils down to just like the person who's interviewing him, normally the demographic. So I'm really good at getting that figured out and going back in, retesting, and getting something that's more concrete on areas that we need that to be.
That's a really good superpower, because there's so many details in this work, and it's easy to kind of get caught up in the details and then kind of forget what problem you're trying to solve, right? And forget what the people you're trying to serve. And so I think that's a great, great superpower for sure. Conversely, what's your design kryptonite?
My kryptonite would be, I'm trying to think of something that's like really good that I do all the time. I guess it would be jumping too fast into solutioning versus spending the time that's needed to develop more of the research side before you get into a project. I always, you know, people always say, you know, so how do you know? So like sometimes you can get that blank slate. You can have the kickoff meeting and they tell you about the project, what it needs to do. And from there, it's like, okay, you take it and go. And you either have to figure out, I'm going to either do this design thinking exercise that's going to help me figure out A, B, C, D, or E. Maybe do some participation design with some people in-house to figure out what they think it should look like. You know, maybe do that with some stakeholders. And if I don't do that, I run into issues later. And I'm like, I like to jump in, do some design, and get it off my mind so I can like narrow things down, you know, because that helps me get the obvious. But that puts me in very difficult situations later, because as you know, as designers, we can sometimes get attached to something that we design. But if it's not going to work, you know, most of that you could find out early on in the process, if you took the time to do the research to figure out, you know, what would work or what wouldn't.
That is so good. I appreciate your transparency on that, Tim, and your vulnerability. That's something I think a lot of us struggle with too. And I'll raise my hand too, because I love design. I love like especially the visual parts of design. Like I really do, and I think I've always been drawn to that. So I totally relate to that, and I just kind of want to start like playing. I just want to start playing in Sketch, and you know, like start kind of come up with some UI. And it's like, well, wait, I don't know what problem I'm solving yet. So you got to check yourself on that, you know, for sure. And I think that's a really good reminder for all of us to make sure we have all the data we need to get started. I know that we have to, you know, in an agile kind of format, which a lot of us do now, we iterate, which is awesome. We, even if it's just enough data, right? Just enough data to get going, and then we can continue researching in the meantime. But at least let's have that starting point, that foundation of who we're serving and the problem we're trying to solve, be that on the user side and the business side. So great, great advice. Now, this is a fun one, Tim. And this is, I always caveat this question because I know you didn't get where you are on your own. None of us did. We all kind of, you know, we're lucky enough to find ourselves on like an Avengers or a Justice League, you know, of other designers, you know, kind of propelling us forward. And so I know that is true, but I know you've also, as we've touched on already, achieved a really great level of success as well in your career. So I want to ask you, Tim, what would your UX superhero name be?
Oh. I want to so bad just be black designer. A play on Black Panther. Yeah, it would be something like that. Maybe Captain Black Designer or something like that. Make it more superhero-like than just, you know, Black Designer. Because like, okay, that was descriptive. That wasn't more of like a name. But yeah, that Captain Black Designer.
I love it. I love it. That's going to be fun. My artist Eli is going to have a fun time with that. So we'll stay away from hokey, like, you know, like pirate caps and stuff, though, for sure.
Okay.
Oh, that's great. One of my favorite lines from Tron was when he said, "I fight for the users." How do you fight for your users, Tim? You touched on it a little bit already, but I'm curious.
You know, it's always a fight, especially within large organizations where you have the one person who constantly talks to people that work with the application. So that person like knows everything. I have to level set, especially when you're able to come in and be like the new designer on the project. You know, I have to let them know. In the calmest way possible, because, you know, like when you get in a corporate, you know, you raise an eyebrow and all of a sudden you're in HR. But you're right. You know, you do have a lot of historical knowledge from working with these users, and you could definitely right now predict what the outcome would be. But what type of designer would I be if I didn't conduct my own research and do, you know, my own studies, you know, and do user testing to make sure that what I get from these tests do align with what you're saying? Because then that only makes the things that you're saying stronger. But if there's an inkling of something being different, that also allows us to be flexible enough to take on the things that are different in what you're saying and add those to the things that you're saying to make this an even stronger or better application for the user. And so with that, you know, I find myself in that constant battle where I'm battling with people who think they know it all, you know, like have done it all, you know, and I really have a strong urge to pull out my sword of truth for those people who think that they are UX designers, you know, the ones that like to come with like a pre-prototype. Oh, well, I was just thinking about this and I want to send this your way. Oh, well, thank you. I'll add it to the collection. And we would definitely take this into consideration as we continue to bring a solution to the particular project that we have. But yeah, it's normally that type of fight and that type of script that I use in order to help keep us aligned to the plan that we put forward for the users. Every day is always like a fight because it's always someone who's like, who will take something small that a user said and run with it, especially when you're doing maybe like a usability test. And, you know, the user's right there. They're using the prototype and they're thinking out loud and they say one thing out loud. And you have like a silent listener who's a stakeholder take that and like just run with it and be like, the user said this. No, a user said that. When we're looking and, you know, we're bringing forth the research from these different tests, we're looking at trends. And this is what the trend said. We had like 6 out of 5 to say this, or, you know, 7 out of 10 to say this is that and other. And we normally run around with the majority. And only if there was something that a user said that is very significant that no one has looked at, such as, oh, you know, I have no way to get back. How do I get back? Because I want to go back and look at the other screen. Now, that is something that you run with and be like, yo, like, we didn't anticipate user wanting to go back, you know, so that, you know, it's a different point. But yeah, I'm always fighting for the users every day. I think every UX designer is fighting for the users every day because it's always some stakeholder who's like, so yeah.
That's awesome. I love that. And I think that's another call to arms, so to speak, about being a good communicator. Because I think this field is all about communication, right? I mean, whether we're doing it visually or whether we're doing it with a teammate or with a stakeholder, right? So, and it's that it's that juggling act of the business, the users, and your team, right? And so it's kind of navigating all that. So I that was great, great advice. Now, Tim, let's wrap up the show with the imparting of superpowers. What's one habit that you believe contributes, in addition to fighting for the users every day, which I love that, what's one habit you believe contributes to your success?
People to talk with. So building up your team of friends or UX designers specifically who you can talk to about what you're doing and how you're doing it and things that like that just happen. And even if it's just like you just letting it out, because what ends up happening is they point out things that you might could do better, such as I learned from a friend, you know, as you're going through, you know, the testing, allow them, make sure you tell them and reiterate on them thinking out loud, you know, don't, you know, what they say is, you know, between you and them, you know, it's, if you're, especially if it's someone within the company, you know, it's not going to be articulated back to a boss or anything. You know, we have some sign observers who are taking notes for me, but nothing that anybody says is going to, you know, go back, because it allows the user to be open and free, you know, and that's what we want. We want people to not be afraid. We want them to be completely honest. And then also, you know, you need that magical eye that allows you to see what people are not seeing. You know, it's just like the iPhone, such as what Steve Jobs said. What if I would have asked, same thing, same situation, you know, Steve liked to steal stuff, but he said, like, if I would have asked a person what type of phone they wanted, they would have told me some type of Razer phone, and they would have never said they wanted, you know, this iPhone, you know, so being able to be innovative enough to know where things that people are saying and being able to create that middle ground where the user didn't ask for this, but this is definitely something that the user wants and need. You know, I always say that that's my thick and chunky spaghetti sauce, especially for people who know the story about how thick and chunky it came to be from doing user research and studying a study that found that people didn't know they wanted thick and chunky, and they made thick and chunky, and today thick and chunky spaghetti sauce is number one seller. So just having that third eye, being on the lookout for that, and having friends to be able to discuss that with you helps you become really awesome in the end, you know. And I'm like currently working on a project to help us as an industry get to that. I think I asked about what 2 days ago on Twitter, you know, if but people find it helpful to have a site that discusses the how and the small things that could improve their success on this journey as a UX designer. And currently 96% said yes, you know, from the right now is up to 25 votes, you know, from people who think that would be interested, because UX is so new. And so I'm looking forward to putting together a resource that would actually bring us together in that area, that number one, it would define, you know, the fundamentals of what we are, what we do, but I want it to be defined by us. And then number two, the project I think should explain the how, because I want to know how other organizations are doing it or what they were doing that's different. Because currently at the organization that I'm at, you know, they definitely are not as structured as Wells Fargo was. And the way Wells Fargo turned around research was just crazy, because, I mean, they have a whole UX team, so they could turn, you know, some stuff around really quickly. I mean, we did a design sprint, and I have to tell people, because some people think, oh, you do a design sprint, you have, like, a workable product, bam, you could do one every week and do your different product. No, a design sprint helps you create that high pie in the sky, you know, idea product that you want. And then you take that, and you're able to have, you have to peel off the skin of that, you know, and get down to things that you can actually do. Because once you have that, that's all of the wants and I gotta haves within that. And you can always refer back to what you did in that design sprint with that particular application that you designed to help inform you as you move forward in the project with, you know, the things that would be innovative and not innovative. And then with having friends and talking with different people, what you find out is how different organizations do things, such as IBM, when they think about design thinking. Number one, they know design thinking is just a phrase. It could be called enterprise, innovative thinking or whatever, because a lot of people don't like the phrase design thinking. But within that, they like to, they have these heels within their thinking. And so within that, the heels explain the who, the what, and the wow. And the wow is the innovative part. So say if you and I had like a business or an organization, and it was taking us 3 months to get someone signed on into the door and start working. You know, that would go similar to who is a person interested in work at the organization, what they want to be an employee and work in, you know, this particular area. The why would be, you know, they're able to sign up, get interviewed, and get in the door within 24 hours. That would be a wow. You know, the wow is normally, you know, around time frame or something like that. But, you know, if I took that same type of thinking and start throwing it into some of my thought processes, like what is the wow? What, you know, what is the who, what, and wow for this application? And once all three of those become true, I've like really, you know, made a huge difference or an impact within what I was doing. Yeah, I would blow minds away. And that's why I say it's very important to have friends and to have people within UX doing the same work that you're able to talk to about what you're doing, about what they're doing, who can help you innovate on your thought processes to make you a better UX designer.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Keith. I make websites and I fight for the users. You're listening to User Defenders Podcast with Jason Ogle.
Wow. A lot to unpack there. It's innovation. What makes this field so exciting is being able to innovate and being able to kind of find new ways to do things. And you touched on it twice already, Tim, in this interview. You mentioned two pretty historical figures that have innovated, Henry Ford and Steve Jobs. And of course there's many more. But those guys particularly have probably come up with two of arguably a couple of the most innovative devices or mediums of our time. And I'd say that innovation is really, it's not reinventing something from scratch. It's taking in something that exists and just making it better. Yeah, there you go. That's it. And then applying your own kind of influences to it, you know, and that's what's so neat about design is that we all have different influences and again, another nod to diversity in design too, because we all bring different points of view and it's better. We're better together, all of us, right? When we bring those things to the table,
right?
And make things better for others. So I love it. Yes. And you know, you're talking about the magical eye. I couldn't help but think about, I am the eye in the sky looking at you. Yeah. I can read your mind.
I am the eye in the sky looking at you. I can read your mind.
I like to sing songs too, Tim.
Oh, I do it all the time. It's the eye of the tiger. Yeah. Yeah. Let me get off of Katy Perry. Yeah.
Come on. Oh, that's awesome. Tim, what's your most invincible UX resource or tool you can recommend to our listeners?
I mean, we've all seen the different UX blogs, UX Matters. What else? I mean, Smashing Magazine has a UX section, which I've been to recently, and it really surprised me because they did more explanation, a little more explanation into the how versus general explanation. Those are like the biggest two. My number one resource, and this just really sound corny, but it is, and that's where I have the most followers, is on Twitter, because I would say something really quick to something on Twitter, and then you can get answers, you know, by the end of the day, be like 20, 30 people who will help you to answer, you know, your question. And yeah. I mean, if you use a hashtag, their hashtag system there is very in-depth, so it's really great to be able to put hashtag UX design, ask the question, and see all the people who reply back and to help you with it. So I would definitely say utilize social media as a tool.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, and Twitter is an amazing tool for those things. Fully agree with you. If you could recommend one book to our listeners, what would it be and why?
Well, one book that I really enjoy reading that I like is the Manage Your Day to Day, Build Your Routine, Find Your Focus, and Sharpen Your Creative Mind, which is the part of the 99U book series. I believe that within that book, well, what it is like, to me, it's kind of like open-ended, and it has a lot of of our industry's leaders with who's in there who like do these different things to try to help them either stay very creative or to try to help them manage their day to day. And it really at the end is left open ended up to you to figure out which one of these different mechanisms or styles that these different people are using would work best for you. And I like that because it really challenges the way that I manage myself and helps me build a routine. Before reading that book, no one would have ever told you that I get up at about 6 a.m. and design for myself first before I start designing for anybody else. Before reading that book, I wouldn't ever have told you that I work up to about 90 minutes. At 90 minute point, it's time for me to refresh and recharge. And that's when I start looking at emails. But yeah, I design for 90 minutes at a time. And then after that, I'm like, the next thing is like looking at emails, replying to emails. And I do that for 90 minutes before I jump back on, you know, 90 minutes of me doing designing. I mean, that basically came from me reading that book, Manage Your Day to Day, Build Your Routine, Find Your Focus, and Sharpen Your Creative Mind. Currently, you can buy the paperback on Barnes & Noble for $7.73. But yeah,
that was a good ad for that.
Yeah, they should pay me.
They should pay you for that. They should give you a royalty for that. That sounds great. I'm interested in that book. I love things like that. Like, you know, routines, you know, routines are key. I think we all have routines. They're either bad or good. I think that's the bottom line. So why not really go for a good routine and see what it does to your creativity, your innovation, and your empathy,
for gosh sakes.
Right?
Yes, yes. It's going to make you so much better. I can't wait to see how better you guys get. Yes.
I love it. I love it. I almost wish this was video. I almost wish that I normally don't do video, but I would, I just feel like it would be so great to see your face during, you know, some of your expressions and stuff.
I am so animated.
I know it. I know. Oh, well, I love the magic of audio. Audio is great. So Tim, lastly, and this is one of my favorite questions. What's your best advice for aspiring UX superheroes?
Don't wait for someone to tell you to do it. The best people are the self-starters, and the self-starters are people who will get up and do it themselves. If you see a problem, see an issue, tackle it yourself. You know, don't sit around and just let it spiral. Like, if you know there are certain things with an app that you don't like, you know, whether it's like Uber or whatever, how about you design that solution and put that solution out there for the world? One good thing that could come about it is you see them enact that solution and you know that you thought about it first and you were the one that put it out there first, and you can probably tell them that, yo, like, y'all stole this from me. But, you know, it's just a good idea, and it helps you in your creative thinking to challenge yourself on these different things. So that's what I tell everybody. You know, the best superheroes in the world, they don't wait. They get out there and start fighting, you know, for the things that they believe in. And that's one thing that I do. I didn't start the Design Plus Diversity Conference because I was seeking fame and fortune. Design Plus Diversity was my senior thesis. And I was told after my senior thesis, Tim, don't talk about it. You should probably do more about it. And that's where the conference came from. I found some people who also thought the same thing that I thought. And we got together and, you know, in the third year of pulling off this conference of bringing people together to talk about diversity issues with our industry. The first year was only 50-something people, you know, and right now, to date, we're looking at 300-some people attending the conference this year with major support from larger organizations such as Microsoft, Adobe. Of course, AIGA is a huge supporter of the conference. You know, this would have never have happened. I mean, even Twitter is going to be a huge supporter this year. You also see them as a sponsor this year. Yeah, this all happened not because someone said, yo, Tim, do this. You know, it was something that Tim was passionate about and Tim wanted to do. Hate speaking about myself from the third person, but it's something that I was passionate about. And so I tell you the same thing. don't wait. You know, we'll be dead and gone, and it'll be a lot of things that you didn't do. You know, I mean, the most inspirational things is hearing the things that people who were on their deathbed talking about the things that they wish they would have done. Don't let that one thing that you talking about that you would have done not be done because you didn't do it or were being lazy. Get up and do it. You know, tell yourself you can do it. And I mean, if you need anybody to like talk it through or to help you or push you in the right direction, I'm always there and I'm always an email away. I can be like your very UX godfather and help you get things solved. But yeah, that's it. That's all I have. That's all I have. So as you move forward, you be the one, you be the difference, and you can make the difference.
Bam. Man, that was so inspiring, Tim. I am charged up by that. And you know, you made me think of a wonderful Mark Twain quote too, when you were talking about don't wait. You know, you're gonna be on your deathbed and have those regrets that you didn't do what you could have done, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is a Mark Twain quote. I love this. He said, 20 years from now, you will be more disappointed by the things you didn't do than by the ones you did do. So throw off your boldness, sail away from the safe harbor. Catch the trade winds in your sails. Explore, dream, discover. Ah, so good. Tim, as we close, my friend, can you tell our audience the best way to connect and to keep up with you? As you so generously put it out there to be kind of help guide anybody who's in need along the way.
Yeah, so I'm like on just about everything. The issue with trying to find me on everything is what name am I up on everything. So on most things, you can find me Timothy Hikes. So on Twitter, you can find me up under Timothy Hikes. On Facebook, you can find me up under Timothy Hikes. On YouTube, you can find me up under Timothy Hikes. Some other things, you can find me up under Max De La Rose. So that's a childhood name I made for myself. So like on Instagram, Max De La Rose, which you can like go back in history and see a whole bunch of pictures of me when I was little. But yeah, and then for those who like don't bother with social media at all, there's always my personal email, and I'm Tim at TimHikes, HYKES.com. And then also finally, my website, which is TimHikes.com.
Awesome. And listeners, defenders, I'll be sure to link to all of those as well. Or maybe I'll just pick the top two or three. Because you're everywhere, my friend, and I love it. So in closing, Tim, I want to say, you know, this is something that's kind of been, I've been thinking about a little bit as well. And, you know, as we kind of touched on your important 28 Days of Black Designers project, I was just thinking about, you know, along with Harriet Tubman and Martin Luther King, of course, for me, one of my favorite black historical figures is maybe somebody that you know, maybe we don't hear about as much, but I remember even from learning about him in school, it was George Washington Carver. Mm-hmm. And I, this guy, he's a UX designer, folks. I believe, I mean, he's a brilliant, brilliant man. He, you know, innovated around peanuts and just totally helped talk about innovation. He completely revolutionized and helped the economy at a time that was so desperately needed in farming and everything. But I think he's a UX designer too, because of what his tombstone reads. And I just want to share this real quick. His tombstone reads, "He could have added fortune to fame, but caring for neither, he found happiness and honor in being helpful to the world." Tell me that's not a UX designer.
That is.
Right? And Tim, right, my friend, you are doing the same thing, and I appreciate you. And we all salute you. All the defenders listening, I know, are going, yes. And so thank you for what you're doing. Please, please keep doing what you're doing, and even more, as I know you will. And last but not least, I just want to say, fight on, my friend. Such an inspiring interview with Captain Black Designer Tim Hikes. I love what Tim is doing with his wonderful 28 Days of Black Designers project. Be sure to check it out at 28blacks.com, and I do believe it will continue to climb the ranks in Google. It's hard to believe that the ignorance of racism and racial prejudice still exists in America, but sadly, it does. To any fellow human who bleeds the same color as everyone else, who thinks you are superior to a certain race because of the color of your skin, I'd ask you to consider whether you'd still feel the same when that person of whatever color
is caring for you on your deathbed, and or after a serious accident where your life is literally in this person's hands. Hands that I believe in that crucial moment will be the most beautifully colored hands you've ever seen. It doesn't make sense, and it's counterproductive, not to mention ignorant. Just like Zac Efron and his 8-pack sings in High School Musical, "We're all in this together," we all need to start acting like it and looking out for each other and continue to shine a spotlight on those of any color who are making a difference in design and beyond. Let's all be colorblind together in a good way. Be sure to tweet your takeaways and mention at Tim Hikes and at User Defenders. One of the things I did while sitting in a chair for 6 weeks recovering from my ankle surgery is upgrade my RSS feed, which allowed UD to be submitted into Spotify. And great news, we are on Spotify. So please do me a kindness if you would, while you're already jamming out to, again, the High School Musical soundtrack, or maybe more currently the Greatest Showman soundtrack, search for User Defenders and follow the show on Spotify. It helps the show get better ranking there, just like you've done so well by subscribing to this show on iTunes or wherever else you listen to this podcast. I also set up a quick link to get there. It's userdefenders.com/Spotify. I want to thank Eli Jorgensen for the astonishing artwork. He absolutely knocked it out of the park on this one. You can check it out at the show notes, actually, at userdefenders.com/052. I also want to thank Adobe XD for sponsoring this episode. In 2 weeks, believe it or not, I have a wonderful, truly deep dive with the one and only original User Defender, Alan Cooper. Be sure to subscribe to automatically receive it. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one. Again, so great to be back with you, Defenders. And until next time, as always, fight on, my friends.